Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about efforts by American colleges and universities to help students prepare for the real world of work.
We have to do a much better job of talking to students much earlier about what employers are expecting so that students themselves know earlier in their college careers that these are things they need to work on more than once, and over time they need to hone these skills.
Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about the word brainwash. It's not as clean as it sounds.
The American public claimed the Chinese brainwashed the soldiers into preferring China over the United States.
And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we continue to discuss the events of the 1930s and American foreign policy during that time.
I would dedicate this nation to the policy of the good neighbor, the neighbor who resolutely respects himself, and because he does so, respects the rights of others.
So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So let's get started. Here's Pete Musto.
College students might be surprised to learn they can take a class that only teaches about climbing trees. That class is taught at Cornell University in the American state of New York. But it is not the most unusual subject taught by a college or university in the United States. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, for example, offers a class on what it calls the mathematics of street fighting. And Santa Clara University in California has a program called the Joy of Garbage. However, classes like these might be one reason many employers feel recent college graduates are not ready for the working world. Offering non-traditional classes might also be why some grads feel their college years failed to prepare them for a professional career. The Association of American Colleges and Universities reports on ways to improve higher education. The group surveyed about 400 employers and 613 college students about how ready those students were to enter the professional world in 2015. The survey found large differences between the thinking of the students and the employers. Many of the differences were related to skills both students and employers believe are necessary. For example, 65% of the students felt their writing skills were strong enough for the professional world. But only 27% of employers said college students were well prepared with that skill. Another example is the students' ability to work with persons with whom they have little in common. The study showed 55% of students felt they were well prepared in this area, but only 18% of employers felt the same. Deborah Humphreys is the Senior Vice President for Academic Planning and Public Engagement at the Association of American Colleges and Universities. She says there are several reasons why these differences in opinion exist. For one thing, she says, the beliefs of both employers and students are unrealistic. Employers are not valuing the skills students offer as much as they should, she says. Also, students may feel they are more prepared than they actually are. Another reason is that the American economy has changed and employers are asking more of their employees than ever before, she says. Technology helps workers do more with less. The current generation of college students is highly skilled with technology. But there is a limit to what employers can expect from a young person with little professional experience, Humphreys says. She adds that some college professors or other faculty have not given enough thought to how the classes they will teach will help students find jobs or be good employees.
We have to do a much better job of talking to students much earlier about what employers are expecting so that students themselves know earlier in their college careers that these are things they need to work on more than once, and over time they need to hone these skills. And then I also think that we don't do a very good job in higher education of really intentionally helping students prepare for and make that transition from college to career.
Dedra Fain works at George Mason University in Arlington, Virginia. She teaches a class called Civility and Professionalism. George Mason offers the class as part of its degree program in hospitality, but any student can take the course. Fain says she uses the class to provide students with the skills employers want, such as problem solving. But she also tries to teach the importance of professional etiquette, like being on time and taking responsibility for mistakes. She adds that many ideas about the workplace have changed, but most employers still value traditional social skills and work ethic.
The formality of the workplace has been taken away, but then they expect, even if you come in your sneakers and your jeans, and you can sit at your computer, you can do great work.
The Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University requires students in its master's degree program to take similar courses. Lisa Stevenson is the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Student Services at the Washington, D.C.-based school. She says George Washington started requiring professional skills classes in 1998. The reason? Because students were highly knowledgeable about their subject matter, but struggled with skills like writing or public speaking. However, Stevenson adds the current generation of college students, often called millennials, do have a lot to offer employers.
Every generation has something to learn from the other generation. and we all need to keep an open mind. The millennials aren't going anywhere. They're here. They're in our work environment. So how do we work together to make sure our organizations are successful?
I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Ana Mateo.
Hello, and welcome to another Words and Their Stories. Today, we are talking about expressions to describe people who are not in their right minds. People who are not in their right minds are not thinking in a normal, healthy way. You might say they are brainwashed. Word experts say the word brainwash came into American English in the 1950s, after the Korean War. According to reports, 24 American soldiers held in a Chinese prisoner of war camp chose to stay in China after the ceasefire. At that time, people in the American media and public could not understand why these young men did not want to return to the United States. So, they used the English translation of a Chinese word to describe what they believed had happened. The Chinese word is xi nao. Xi means wash, and nao means brain. The American public claimed the Chinese brainwashed the soldiers into preferring China over the United States. They said Chinese officials used force and fear to make the soldiers believe that China was good and the U.S. was bad. Now, that is a dark story on several levels, but don't worry, you can use the word brainwash without starting an international incident. In fact, few people even know the origin of the word. Today, brainwash is used in both informal and formal situations. For example, let's say your friend takes a college course with a very charismatic professor. He uses his good looks, powerful personality, and persuasive arguments to convince the class of mostly women that he knows best and is always right. Your friend becomes obsessed with him. She begins to repeat his words all the time, and she has changed her opinions to go along with his. You could say she is brainwashed. To gaslight someone is also a type of brainwashing. A gaslight is a light powered by gas. They were common before electricity was wired into people's homes and neighborhoods. So why is gaslight a type of brainwashing? This expression comes from the film Gaslight, starring the actress Ingrid Bergman. Bergman marries a man who wants to convince her that she is crazy. He does this by dimming the gaslights in their London home. And then he pretends he doesn't notice. To gaslight someone is a form of psychological abuse. It is when false information is given to a person in the hopes of making them doubt their own memory or perception of an event. It can even be used, as in the movie, to make a person doubt their sanity. If you are a victim of gaslighting, you probably won't know it. That, after all, is the whole point. I'm Ana Mateo.
Brainwashed in our childhood, brainwashed by the school, brainwashed by our teachers, and brainwashed by all the rules, brainwashed by our leaders, by our kings and queens, brainwashed in the open and brainwashed behind the scenes.
Thanks, Ana. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we continue to report on the events of the 1930s and American foreign policy during that time. For much of its history, the United States was not involved in world disputes. Only in the 20th century did it become a powerful and influential nation. President Theodore Roosevelt was the first president to see America as a great power. A few years later, President Woodrow Wilson wanted the United States to become more involved in the world. Many Americans disagreed. They wanted to stay out of international conflicts. The presidents, after Wilson, stayed informed about world events, but they were much less willing to involve the United States than Roosevelt or Wilson had been. As Doug Johnson and Shirley Griffith tell us, the Great Economic Depression that began in 1929 reduced Americans' interest in the world even more.
Franklin Roosevelt became president in 1933. Franklin Roosevelt was not like most Americans. He knew the international situation well from his own experience. Like Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, he wanted to expand America's foreign policies. The terrible crisis of the Depression, however, forced him to spend most of his time on national economic issues. He was able to deal with international issues only very slowly. One of his most important first efforts was to improve relations with Latin American nations.
30 years earlier, President Theodore Roosevelt said the United States had the right to intervene in Latin America. In the years that followed, the United States sent troops to several Latin American countries. Many political leaders in the area accused the United States of treating them like children. Leaders throughout Latin America criticized the United States bitterly at a conference in 1928. When Franklin Roosevelt became president, he promised to treat Latin American nations as friends. He called this his good neighbor policy.
I would dedicate this nation to the policy of the good neighbor, the neighbor who resolutely respects himself and, because he does so, respects the rights of others, the neighbor who respects his obligations and respects the sanctity of his agreements in and with a world of neighbors.
Roosevelt's new policy had an unfriendly beginning. His administration refused to recognize a government in Cuba that opposed the United States. Instead, it helped bring to power a new government that showed more support for the United States. After that, however, President Roosevelt was able to prove that he wanted to improve relations with the countries of Latin America. For example, his administration speeded up plans to withdraw American troops from Haiti. It rejected old treaties that gave the United States the right to intervene in Cuba. It recognized a revolutionary government in El Salvador. It recognized the right of Panama to help operate and protect the Panama Canal. And it helped establish the Export-Import Bank to increase trade throughout the Americas.
All of these actions did much to improve the opinion of Latin American leaders about the United States. However, the most important test of Franklin Roosevelt's new policies was in Mexico. the Mexican government seized control of oil companies owned by investors in the United States. A number of influential Americans wanted the president to take strong action. He refused. He only agreed to urge the Mexican government to pay American investors for the value of the oil companies.
As United States relations with Latin America improved, its relations with Britain got worse. Britain blamed Franklin Roosevelt for the failure of an international economic conference in 1933. It also felt the United States Congress was unwilling to take a strong position against international aggression by other nations. Some British leaders had so little faith in Roosevelt that they proposed seeking cooperation with Japan instead of the United States. New leaders in Japan, however, soon ended this possibility. They presented Britain with such strong military demands that the British government gave up any idea of cooperation with Japan.
One big question in American foreign policy in the 1930s concerned the Soviet Union. The United States had refused to recognize the government in Moscow after the Bolsheviks took control in 1917. Yet Franklin Roosevelt saw the Soviet Union as a possible ally if growing tensions in Europe and Asia burst into war. For this reason, he held talks in Washington with a top Soviet official. In 1933, he officially recognized the Soviet government.
President Roosevelt hoped recognition would lead to better relations. But the United States and the Soviet Union did not trust each other. They immediately began arguing about many issues. Within 2 years, the American ambassador to Moscow urged President Roosevelt to cut diplomatic relations with the Soviets. Roosevelt refused. Relations between the two countries became even worse. Yet Roosevelt believed it was better to continue relations in case of an emergency. That emergency, World War II, was just a few years away.
Economic issues played an important part in American foreign policy during the early 1930s. In 1933, a major international economic conference was held in London. France and Italy led a movement to link the value of every nation's money to the price of gold. American delegates to the conference rejected the idea. They argued that it would slow America's recovery from the Great Depression. As a result, the London conference failed. Although President Roosevelt opposed linking the value of the American dollar to the price of gold, he did not oppose international trade. During the 1930s, his administration negotiated new trade agreements with more than 20 countries.
The 1930s saw major political changes in Asia and Europe. President Roosevelt watched these developments with great interest. In Japan, military leaders gained control of the government. Their goal was to make Japan Asia's leading power. In Italy, the government was headed by fascist Benito Mussolini. Another fascist, Francisco Franco, seized power in Spain. And most important, Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party increased their strength in Germany. Franklin Roosevelt understood much sooner than most Western leaders the threat that these new leaders represented.
Most Americans shared Roosevelt's dislike for the new fascist movements. However, Americans felt another emotion much more strongly. It was their desire to stay out of war. World War I had just ended 15 years earlier. It was still fresh in the minds of many Americans. A majority of the population opposed any policy that could involve the United States in another bloody conflict.
A public opinion study was made in 1937. The study showed that 71% of Americans believed it had been a mistake for the United States to fight in World War I. So President Roosevelt was not surprised when Congress passed a law ordering the administration to remain neutral in any foreign conflict. Congress also refused an administration proposal that the United States join the World Court. Franklin Roosevelt shared the hope that the United States would stay out of foreign conflicts. However, Adolf Hitler and other fascists continued to grow more powerful. The situation forced Americans to begin to consider the need for military strength.
Americans did not want to become involved in another world war. They called on President Roosevelt and their representatives in Congress to remain neutral in world affairs. But aggression by Germany and Japan would force Americans to choose between their desire for democracy and their desire for peace. That will be our story next week. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul. It was presented by Doug Johnson and Shirley Griffith, and we thank them all. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. You can also read, listen to, and download our other programs. And you will find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also send us a message through our website. Please know that however you reach us, we do read every message you send. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.